Let me invite you to just allow your eyes to close or softly focus. Just take a few nice, deep breaths. Allowing yourself to slow down, to arrive. To be here. And just gently drawing your awareness inside to your thoughts, to your feelings, maybe to your body. Is there any place where you notice some sensation or tension? Can you just bring a loving, compassionate presence to whatever's present for you today? Maybe being reminded that love and peace are not things to go out and get or earn or deserve or find. The fullness of love and peace are already yours to receive and discover again. So just noticing how it is to rest and receive the love and the peace that is uniquely and abundantly yours. And then allowing your awareness to come back to your breath, to your body, allowing your attention to come back to the sounds, the smells, the sights, and the other beings among us. And as you're ready, gently opening your eyes. George, Dan, Stephen, thank you. Wow. Is it okay if I sit down? I was standing all day yesterday, and I'm an old man, you know? My body just ain't working anymore. Long affirmation. Oh, yeah, no, I was just thinking, you know, the community that sings together, plays together, stays together, and grows together. You know, and there's just a magic in music and art that just really does it. That's what it's all about, you know. Sometimes I just wonder, what the heck? And the music that listens to cell phones, yes, all right. I have had, just like I said, such an amazing week. Before I get any further, though, do y'all see Lauren Walls? Lauren Walls is here today. It's nice to see you in a chair here instead of a hospital bed, Lauren. Yes. So, so good to see you. Yes, yes. So, yeah, Lauren gave me a gift on one of my visits to see him. He prayed for me. And I walked out of there thinking like I could just conquer the world. I was just like, I'd been knighted in the presence of Lauren. So thank you for your love and care. I've just had such a rich week. I have so much I want to share with you today. I don't know if we're going to get through it all this morning. This might be a two-part or a three-part message. But I want to just continue on this topic of exploring the Christ way. Am I spiritual, not religious? You know, people ask often as I'm around town, you know, are you a Christian? Is Unity Christian? And my response, the best response that I offer is, you know, I'd like for you to decide. It really doesn't matter what I think or what others think, but I hope that, you know, you can decide and arrive at peace for yourself. And so that's really the intention. And this topic of spiritual and not religious is one that we hear a lot. How many of you have heard that? I'll just give you a spoiler alert, kind of where I'm going with this is I think we may be more spiritual and religious than we think. And to just really understand and appreciate that about yourself. Just to kind of set this in context, to tell you a little bit about my week. My week actually started Sunday afternoon in Judith's Music for Life workshop. If you haven't participated in one of those yet, you need to. Judith is a spiritual pioneer, a spiritual explorer, a spiritual edgewalker, offering therapy and music that is just amazing. And as we were winding down, she just gently, lovingly offered me a prompt that set me on a process for the whole week, just asking the question, am I trapped in an unsettled chronic comfort zone? Am I trapped in an unsettled, chronic comfort zone? That stopped me dead in my tracks, and it started with just listening to music that I was listening to, whatever. You know, I'm an avid meditator. I'm an avid prayer. You know, they say enlightenment is porn for perfectionists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just set me on this process of taking a deeper look at my life and how I show up in the world. And how I receive the world, and particularly how I receive being here. You know, it's just really amazing. But it was stunning. You know, and so when I think of this idea of the Christ way, spiritual, not religious, you know, it might be helpful for you to just reflect on yourself. Are there any unsettled? How does that go again? Yeah, unsettled chronic comfort zones that maybe you're stuck in. Here's why. Here's, again, the inspiration. Love is an intelligence that seeks expression. And all expressions of love are welcome, starting with each and every one of you. Each and every one of you are full, divine expressions of love. The very first word in the Bible says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And that word, words, the Greek word logos, and it could mean idea. It could mean intention. It could mean imagination. In the beginning, in the very, very beginning, was an idea of this thing called love expressing itself in you and as you. And what's happening today is love is expressing itself in magnificent ways. I took a walk this morning along Tubbs Hill, and it was it's just my happy place. And it's a spiritual experience because I'm blessed to be able to live about 3 blocks from the east entrance to Tubbs Hill. And so the first half of the walk, just walking out there, gazing and beholding the trees, the lake, the mountains, the sky, and then I get out around the point there, and I come back, and there's the resort. in downtown Coeur d'Alene. And there, and the path I follow is I come down there, and then I walk up Sherman to 11th and walk back to my thing. And just to walk Sherman Avenue with the boutiques, the restaurants, the pubs. I was playing a game with, I was over at Sport and Erica with Dane last night. We were playing the game Aggravation, and which is an aggravating game. Have you ever played that game? I got more than aggravated. I got irritated. I was driving home last night about 11 o'clock, you know, and there's those three bars, the Beacon, Moose Jaw, and Iron Horse, you know, just pulsing with the heartbeat of love and fun and, you know, in this town. You know, you just can't help but get caught up in that and just to walk the street. But it's just the interplay of the human, natural, you know, interaction and being with one another. It was just a really spiritual experience. And then yesterday, I spent the day at Pride in the Park. And what was interesting was the day before, I was taking a walk with a friend, and at that same park was another party going on in celebration of families. And I just thought to myself, this would be a James Cress miracle. Could these two groups party together? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? I want to share with you some really personal, tender things about yesterday. First of all, have you seen my socks?
Yeah! Oh, lava!
Okay. Yes! Let me talk to you about rainbows. Does anybody remember the story in the Bible that talks about a rainbow? Matt, what can you tell us about that story? Yes. And do you remember what that flood was about? I'm kind of picking on you because I know you're a theologian at heart. God's promise to not flood the earth again, yes. And what was that flooding about?
Taking out everything that he wants.
Yeah. The elimination, the killing. We could say the judgment of God. That rainbow was a sign of no more judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just hold on here, okay? I hope next year that we'll bring a Unity table there. I know Unity's had a table down there. I just wanted to go for myself and just have, you know, an experience of the lay of the land. I mean, it was just, again, a beautiful, beautiful thing as I was there. Met some amazing people. There was one group that came through, interestingly, dressed in black, yelling Bible verses about repenting and going to hell and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, God, what do I do? There was this guy from one of the bands who had a saxophone. And just started walking with them and playing the song Tequila, you know. And sorry, the University of Washington blood in me was just like, okay, I got my bubbles. They gave me some bubbles, and I just walked next to him as he played Tequila as these guys were walking, shouting Bible verses, telling all these sinners to repent. It was just wild. It was just wild. But I just want to offer some reflections, because I think as good, serious, thoughtful people here deal with how does homosexuality and heterosexuality and families happen. What I find when I talk to people, and I spent 45 minutes yesterday talking to a couple of very nice young men who were quite biblically illiterate. I got their phone numbers, and we're going to continue the conversation. We got talking about this difference between love and lust. And that every passage in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation that talks about homosexuality, if you read it in its original language and context, I'm not going to go into that today. If you'd like to, buy me a nice cup of coffee or a nice glass of wine, and I'll use my two seminary degrees and explain it to you. They talk about lust. And so, and of course, you know, we were talking about that, and this idea of what effect does LGBTQIAS+ have on loving families and children. I'm straight. I've been straight all my life. I've been involved in some things that have given me a deep peace about my straightness, stories that would make the enamel on your teeth curl that I'm not going to tell you about here. Don't worry about it. But in my experience of growing up, I have not been sexually abused. And by meaning abused, I've not been touched in any of my private areas. But I have been propositioned by three gay men. The interesting thing is that those three gay men were people from my conservative evangelical church that I was a part of back in Seattle, all of whom, with a banging fist, pounded the pulpit that homosexuality is a sin. And I'll just say this, because I don't want to make the whole message about this today, but the more embodied you become about your own sexuality and at peace with your own sexuality, the more at peace you can be with other expressions of sexuality. Is there abuse that happens in LGBTQIAS? Yes. Is there abuse that happens in straight communities? Yes. Okay? I think we can unite on that. And I hope that we can celebrate all the expressions of love that are happening today. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for even the trans conversations that are coming as people learn to get better acquainted with the masculine and feminine inside of ourselves. This is Jungian psychology, and I won't go into that either. But I hope, getting back to the thing here, that we can create and cultivate a community here where pro-family, pro-LGBTQIAS+, whatever, you know, can live together in a celebration of love and compassion. But I'm telling you, the depth of your assumptions will be challenged deeply, and it could feel like you're losing your faith and having your world rocked. Mm-hmm. That's how love works. When love comes into your life, it can break your heart. Yeah. It can break your heart. In fact, I would go so far to say, if you haven't had your heart broken, you haven't loved. And to love is to risk heartbreak. And so my just invitation is, can we as a community here hold that heartbreak in love and compassion and watch what God does? This, the beauty of this place is just so stunning. I get chills when I talk about it. The quality of the human beings here, the love that I have received and the sense of connection that I've received, I've never received it in Seattle. it's here. And I am so blessed and I am so honored to be a part of this community here for such a time as this that, yeah. So, all right, so much more we can say about that. So what's the vision? The vision here is to co-create an inclusive community of spiritual explorers and pioneers aligned on living our values and principles forward. Another highlight of my week this week was attending Chris Bain's memorial service on Thursday. Were any of you here for that? Yeah. I had a chance to meet Reverend Marilyn and had a wonderful conversation with her. We're going to continue our dialogue here. And this place was packed with about 100 and how many, Geraldine? 172. It just felt like old unity, you know? And I was in the back with Brian and Jim, who worked their behinds off, putting it all together, just taking it all in. And when I was back there, I found myself praying to Chris, whom I'd never had a chance to meet, and to Marilyn, would you at least give me just a mustard seed portion of your faith and vision that had the audacity to set up a community like this here. It's just this. How long has this church been here? 40, 50, 60? 1980. Okay. Aryan Nation land here back in the 80s, right? Who had the audacity and the courage to think of setting something like this up here? I'm humbled, I'm honored, and I'm deeply inspired by that faith and vision that's here. And I think that same faith and that same courage, it's what's going to carry us forward as we move forward. But here's the thing. Our values and our principles are timeless. Nothing on this planet will take them away. It was like Chris was present in that service. His spirit, his heart, his generosity, as his family talked about him. I never met him, but it was like I felt him. He was just there, you know? And the pioneers who settled this church and this building here on this land was there. It was palpable. It was thick. My friends, I want you to know there is nothing, I'll say it again, absolutely nothing in all of the universe that can take that away. And I say that because some of you might be sitting here wondering, was it worth it? Did it make a difference? I bump up against that. Yeah. You know, did all of that effort, all of that money, all of this time putting this church here mean anything? You need to know yes. That impact may show up in ways different than what you think, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. Because this, here's the deal. Models and strategies are changing. Models and strategies for ministry are changing. As we look back to what was, this is that love thing. Sometimes love invites us to let go. I'm a nostalgia guy. You know, this place reminds me of the place I was born in Wisconsin, you know, the happy neighborhood place, you know, that I lived and all that kind of stuff. But my friends, those days are gone. And here's what's important. To go back and recreate what was isn't faith. It's tempting. You know the story of, whoops. My microphone dropped. How about that? All right. The story of the Exodus, you know, God leading his people free, you know. Yeah, they get free for a couple months, and where do they go? The desert. Yeah. And what do they start doing? Hey, I want to go back to Egypt. It was safe there. We had 3 square meals a day, a roof over our head, and money in the bank. And you see, it took just days for people to get out of Egypt, but it took a lifetime for Egypt to get out of them. My friends, the spiritual lesson for you and I, and some of you are here from, you know, some of you have been here a long time, some of you haven't, you know, whatever, but it can take a matter of days to get you out of whatever religion you came from, but it can take a lifetime to get the religion out of you. This is why we have to be open, okay? What's changing? The minister-centric and the building-centric model. It's listening to people tell stories, you know, there was a day when this was Maryland's church. Then there was a time when it was Deidre's church. And then there was a time it was Mike Moran's church. And then there was a time it was Steve Toll's church. And then there was a time it was Dennis Ashley's church. Have I left anyone out? John. Who?
John
Constantine. John
Constantine.
Okay, John. Okay, I could John. I'll just call it John. Yeah, all right. It's beautiful, okay? It would be tempting to say this is now James Church. And I'm here to say, I assume, just so you understand, I assume the mantle of spiritual leadership that you are entrusting me and paying me with seriously. But because I entrust that, and I take that trust very seriously, to just make this all about James and what James wants to do, There is a cooperative spirit that's moving, okay? Building-centric, okay? I'm going to mess with some of you here, so if this offends, I don't intend to, because people ask me about this. James, are you anti-church growth? You know, you don't want another service and this, that, and the other thing, all right? So just to remind you, I come from the West Side. I spent 28 years pastoring in 2 of the largest conservative evangelical Christian congregations in the Seattle area. It's interesting, pastoring conservative churches in liberal Seattle, and now I'm here in a more progressive church. Yeah. So if I seem a little unstable and like I have my bell rung, yes, there's stuff here that's like, what's it? Okay? My first church, you can Google it, Overlake Christian Church in Redmond. At the time, it was the largest church in the state of Washington. 6,000 members offering not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5, but 6, count them, 6 weekly services. Teeming with people, music. I had Julie's job. I was directing 200 voice choirs, 60-piece orchestras, taking groups all over the world, sharing the gospel that I shared with you last week. You know, man, we were buzzing. Here's the other thing. In 1993, that church owned a 1,400-seat auditorium and 10 acres on which it sat, free and clear. I was there the day we burned the mortgage. Now, just put a comma there. Do y'all remember the story of the temptation of Jesus? Do you remember the last temptation? Matt, you're smiling like you maybe know it.
No idea.
I think about it every time. So when I hike Tubbs Hill, you know, my usual trail is to just go around it. If I'm hiking with my friend Greg, he says, hey, let's go to the top. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. That works. I don't want to work that hard. But I get to the top, It's the same thing. If you look to the south, you see the lake, the mountains, the trees. If you turn to the north, you can see north to Post Falls, Rathdrum, Hayden, Coeur d'Alene. Does anybody remember the temptation of Jesus when he went up to the mountain with the devil?
Yeah.
What was it? I'm putting you on the spot. The devil took Jesus to the top of the mountain and said, all of this is yours if you follow me.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, I don't know if the devil is like a horn, you know, a red man with horns and a pitchfork. You know, in a lot of modern mythologies, the devil is portrayed as a more androgynous, you know, creature and being. But it was a temptation to get off mission. And you know what I think that mission is? Build it, and they will come.
Yeah.
Yep. Build it, and they will come. Back to the church I left in Washington. They drank that Kool-Aid and decided 1,400 seats, 10 acres wasn't enough. They raised $23 million in 1995 dollars. I don't know what that is today. To relocate to 27 acres in Redmond and build a 5,000-seat auditorium. Today, that church sits mostly empty, riddled in debt. Now, if that's just, you know, if I seem a little hesitant toward build it and they will come, I'm more they will come, let's build it.
Yeah.
I care more about church health than I do about church growth. I believe in connecting in the community, not just come here to our house, but maybe we go to your house. There are healers and practitioners and spiritualists doing things in this community that are amazing. And I want them to know that they are welcome here. They roll out the red carpet. But there are some people, I don't care how welcoming and affirming you are, going to anything that even looks like a church is like, uh-uh, not for me. I don't care about that. I don't want people to come to church. I want people to come to themselves. I want us to belong together. I want us to live together. I want us to make music and peace and love and harmony and gritty, resilient life transformation in this community today. Folks, we are in the middle of a profound spiritual awakening. And the opportunities before us are incredible. I had an opportunity to meet the president of the Coeur d'Alene Chamber of Commerce this week. A wonderful, wonderful human being who, born and raised here, went to Coeur d'Alene High School. I'm going to have some fun here. I hope you take this fun. And then made the very wise, mature decision to attend the University of
Washington.
Oh, you've been listening. Yes. And worked at Microsoft for 20 years in the Seattle area, has come back to Coeur d'Alene, and now is doing amazing things in this community. She's very politically savvy about what's going on here politically. And the stuff that's happening with beneath the surface, beneath the chatter of what's on social media and what's in the news today, my friends, is stunning. It's not happening over there. It's happening here, right here. She gave me a couple of newspaper articles to read the other day, and I read three of them in the paper. There was one called Common Sense, and there was one called a couple of others, and I read the Common Sense one, and it just made me think, you know, I want to write a column called Uncommon Sense. Jesus' wisdom was uncommon to the people of his day. Jesus' wisdom was jarring and loosening of some of the accepted things of safety. And I think, again, with love, patience, and gentleness, we can welcome that type of consciousness here. And my friends, it's happening. She invited me to the Rotary Club, so I went to the Rotary Luncheon this month. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing, the people that were here. I want to tell you another story. I think I touched on this last week. When I joined the Eagles Club here, beautiful, beautiful place. On the application, it asked me if I was a communist. Just like, am I a Christian? You know, I thought, yeah, you decide that. But hear me out. Since coming here, For the first time in my life, I am in government-sponsored healthcare.
All right.
Yeah. And I've discovered, first of all, it's pretty good. I had this illusion that the government can't run healthcare very well, but the government-assisted healthcare around here is amazing. It's like God has a sense of humor, you know? Every job I worked over in the liberal socialist side of the mountains, either I paid for it or the organization I worked for paid for it. Here, the government is helping me and this community here save money by doing it. Now, as I've told this story to people, people have been very supportive. Well, of course, James, sure, yeah, you've worked hard, okay? Let me ask you this. Would your receiving of that story be any different if my skin was black, brown, red, or olive? Would your reception of that story be different if I was 25 or 30 years old? Would your reception of that story be different if I was a woman? See, the answers to all three of those questions touch on racism, ageism, and sexism. And if we're going to build a resilient community of love and peace, we've got to be willing to ask ourselves with love and compassion, how do those biases live in me? Here's the good news. Love, grace, and mercy can take us into new and exciting waters. It's powerful. All right, next. Here's the invitation. This is inviting a shift from a consciousness of dominance and control toward relationship and cooperation. This is part of that minister-centric model. The old models that have served us very well have been one person or one entity in control of things. That's shifting today. And what we're waking up to is not the language of kingdom, K-I-N-G-D-O-M, but kindom, K-I-N-D-O-M, living in relationship. We were joking. I hope it's okay to tell this joke. I don't know if you guys have been listening to me too much, whatever, but as you notice, we rearranged the chairs just a wee bit this morning. Reverend Dave helped me out this morning, and I really appreciate it, you know, as only the band can do. You know, I was asking them about it. They said, you know, James, have you asked the chairs what they think about being rearranged? I'm like, oh my gosh, no, I haven't. I guess I probably should. But thank you for that reminder. But that's the idea. As we live here and as we grow here and all that kind of stuff, it's tuning in and asking ourselves, asking our neighbors, asking our people around us, asking the land, what do you think? What do you say? You know, I've told you again, this land has given me the gift of saying, James, you belong here just because you are, just as you are. It's a deep, abiding acceptance. And I'm having the experience now of living here as a U.S. citizen, but still a resident of Washington. And I got to tell you, crossing the border from Washington to Idaho, is kind of a spiritual experience. It really, really is. No, it's a new thing. I didn't grow up with that. You know, 53 years I lived over there. But just driving back and forth, I get this, when I cross over into Washington. You know, that's what I love about going to coffee and going to wineries. It's great, you know. And, hear me, I get the same, when I see the big Welcome to Idaho sign. Idaho, warmth. Smiles, love, connection, acceptance in a depth that is I've just never felt before. The Seattle freeze is real. Okay, people just aren't as nice over there. But the love and the warmth here is amazing. It is just stunning, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to experience it. But it comes from when we cooperate, we can see. I learned about cow disease. Have you ever learned about cow disease? I met some people on Tubbs Hill Trail, also from Oregon, and they said, oh yeah, you got to deal with cow disease. It's what people from California, Oregon, and Washington bring here. I'm like, oh, okay, well, thanks. You know, I'm dealing with mine. It was funny, but now why did I say that? I completely lost my train of thought. What was it? Oh, relationship and cooperation. Yes, yes. Can we, as a community of long-timers, middle-timers, really, really short-timers like me, this is where I'm going with it. Yes. Can we hold and honor our labels? I almost wore my Husky sweatshirt to speak today, but that was too audacious, okay? Can we hold to those identities of who we are and live beyond them? This is where I was going with this. At the Chamber of Commerce, they're telling me that what's emerging now are communities that are not nonpartisan, but transpartisan. I love that. Nonpartisan has never made sense to me. How do you deny your partisanship? How do you deny who you are? You know, I mean, I grew up a card-carrying Republican. You know, in the days of Ronald Reagan, I was so bad on my honeymoon. You remember Rush Limbaugh? Yeah, I bought his two books on my honeymoon, The Way Things Ought to Be and See, I Told You So. And it was when Bill Clinton was elected and Slick Willie and all that kind of stuff, okay? I lost favor with the Republican Party when it became Christian nationalist. This is just a teaser of what's coming for July 4th. America is not a Christian nation. America is a nation inhabited by Christians. And there's a big difference, and the language of the Constitution will prove it if you read it. But we'll talk about that July 4th. But anyway, the idea is if we can hold our experiences, name them, label them, but think beyond them, okay? Not deny them. I think sometimes we put them in the ground and we just, you know, pretend that they don't exist. I've never met anybody nonpartisan, but I've met people who have their partisanship and can see beyond to the things that unite us. All right. Let's see what's next here. So maybe all of this to say we're spiritual and religious. You know what? I'm going to just park it here, and we'll pick up the rest next week. But I do want to close with a poem. Brian, maybe you can just put the ending slide up there for me. What this really is about today, and tying this all back to the idea of being spiritual and religious, I know I've touched on a bunch of different contexts today, and we'll talk more about the spiritual part of this. But I really think that at heart, all of us are spiritual and religious. And to live into the... And by religion, I don't mean organized religion. You can be very religious and have never attended an organized church all your life. But living in the honesty of that takes courage. And I just want to leave you with a poem here today to just tie all this together. This is Courage by Jeff Foster. Courage is your willingness to not know, to speak your truth, to walk your path, to face ridicule and rejection, to keep going despite the voices in your head and the judgments of others. And there are no guarantees you will make it. Nobody can walk for you. You walk in radical aloneness, naked in the face of life, no protection, no crutches, no external authority. Only the beating of the heart and the air in the lungs and the thrill and terror of being utterly free and no longer numb. That's me. And knowing from deep within the call of your ancestors, the ground holding you, the sun nourishing you, and the fragrance of love everywhere. Warm tears running down your cheeks, and this gorgeous vulnerability which makes you totally unbreakable. Oh, wow. Amen, and so it is.
I've never seen the wings of an angel floating above in a clear blue sky. I've never seen the kingdom of heaven open its gates before my eyes. I've never seen stand before me, but I know in my heart that you are here. What's invisible to the hunger I have always known in this heart of mine. I can feel within my breath. You are the sun, the one bright morning star, offering life, transforming death. Though I've never seen the glory of your face, and others may doubt you're even here. What's invisible to the human eye, you have always shown in this heart of mine. I can feel your love. I can trust in your faithfulness. I don't need any more than this. I can feel your love. I can feel your feeling.